his face streaking blood from windshield glass that had been hurled into his cheeks and forehead. Splattered with oil and barely able to see through the smoke, Pitch shouted out in glorious defiance, "Curse you, Red Baron!" Too late, the leather-helmeted head in the red cockpit spun around and saw the silver tri-motor boring through the air within 20 feet. He hurled the Fokker into a violent bank, flipping it on its wingtips. It was the wrong move. Pitt had outguessed him. One of the tri-motor's big landing wheels smashed through the wood and fabric, splintering the upper wing into shreds. Pitt only had time for one brief glimpse of the pilot as the Fokker catapulted crazily in an out-of-control spin. In a show of unabashed audacity, he shook his fist at Pitt. Then Pitt lost sight of the red plane as it spun and crashed into the trees around the Shakespearean gardens. Kelly was still leading the children in song as the battered aircraft struggled to stay aloft. "This old man, he play ten, he play knick-knack on my hen." The plane wavered as Pitt sideslipped it. Then it seemed to hang for a moment before the big wheels met the grass, bounced twice, and then the plane was down. Pitt cut the remaining engine and turned to Mary to say something, to compliment her on her intrepid assistance. But he remained silent when he saw her face drained of all color. He put his fingers against her neck, feeling for a pulse. Then his hand dropped and clenched. She was dead. After the children's bumps and bruises, caused from being knocked around during the fight with the Red Fokker, were tended by paramedics, they were reunited with their parents. Pitt stood by a grief-stricken Kelly as the body of her friend was carried from the plane to an ambulance. After the police cordoned off the airplane, Pitt and Kelly were escorted to police cars to be taken to the nearest precinct for questioning. Pitt asked the police officer in charge if they might stop by the wreckage of the Fokker before heading for the precinct. The Red Fokker looked like a crumpled kite as it lay embedded in a huge elm tree, 20 feet off the ground. Firemen working from a ladder on a fire truck were standing under the wreckage staring up at the mangled plane. The engine had been torn from its mountings and was lying partially embedded in the grass. Pitt was surprised to find it wasn't an updated modern engine, but an original Oberursel 9-cylinder that put out 110 horsepower. Then he stared up into the open cockpit. It was empty. A leather flying jacket along with a helmet and goggles, its lenses smeared with streaks of blood, were the only trace of the pilot. With Pitt beside her, Kelly drove up Highway 9 on the west bank of the Hudson River, headed toward her father's home for a talk with Dr. Egan's partner, Josh Thomas. She handled the Jaguar XKR hardtop sports car easily over the wet pavement. She turned right on a narrow asphalt road not far above Stony Point, New York. The road ended at a tall, steel-barred gate that would have stopped a speeding semi-truck and trailer loaded with lead. Two television cameras sat atop high poles opposite the road 20 yards behind the gate. Kelly leaned out her window and punched a code in a box embedded in a rock pillar beside the road. Then she took a remote from the glove compartment and punched in another code. Only then did the gate swing open. "Your father was certainly security conscious," Pitt remarked. "We're not through his security just yet. You can't see them, but there are 4 guards. They were passing between a vineyard, thick with grapevines, when a large barricade suddenly popped up in front of the car. The minute Kelly stopped, a man stepped out of a tree trunk with an automatic rifle, leaned down and peered inside the car.
"Always good to see you, Miss Egan."
"Hello, Gus. How's the baby girl?"
"We threw her out with the bathwater."
"How very wise of you. Is Josh here?"
"Yes, ma'am," answered the guard. "Mr. Thomas hasn't left the premises since your father died."
She drove on, and Pitt looked at her questioningly. "What was all that about throwing the baby out with the bathwater?" "A code," Kelly explained with a smile. "Had I asked about his baby boy instead of girl,
He'd have known I was being held hostage and shot you dead. Kelly stopped the Jaguar in front of a large two-story colonial house with tall columns around the front porch. Pitt followed her up the steps to a double door carved with images of Vikings. What's the significance? Nothing enigmatic. Dad loved to study Viking history. It was only one of his many passions besides his work. A man in his early 60s opened the door. He was wearing a vest with a striped shirt and bow tie. His remaining hair was gray, and he had the limpid blue eyes of someone who was constantly lost in thought. Seeing Kelly, he broke into a wide smile, stepped forward, and swept her in his arms. Then he eased her back and his face clouded with sorrow. I'm so sorry about Elmore. It must have been horrible seeing him die. Thank you, Josh, said Kelly quietly. I know what a shock it must have been for you. Kelly has told me you were very close to her father, said Pitt. Thomas motioned them inside. Yes, yes, Elmore and I worked together off and on for more than 40 years. He was the smartest man I've ever known. He'd have given Einstein and Tesla a run for their money. Thomas led them into the comfortable living room decorated with Victorian furniture and offered them a glass of wine. I feel odd entertaining Kelly in her own house, he said. It will be a while before the estate is settled, said Kelly. In the meantime, consider it your home.